SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday, race fans, broodmare buyers, short yearling buyers. some nice fireworks at the closing session yesterday at Phasing. We'll get to that. We got a lot. We got the action in Frankfurt, which is going to at least take somewhat of a priority the first half hour or so here. Frank Angst is going to join us in 15 minutes or so from, well, I think he's in the office. I don't think he went to Frankfurt. The House committee is having its hearing on the HHR emergency bill. It passed yesterday in the Senate, as was anticipated. I kept saying expected, and that it was, you know, quote unquote, a certainty in the Senate. It passed 22-15, and the support was described as bipartisan, and that's fair. What was stunning, and I'm anxious for Frank's take on it. I'm sure you followed last night, early evening, as you know the reaction was coming to the vote, and there are a couple of individuals in the Senate that got some splaining to do, as they say. I guess. If you live in Lexington, you get used to I don't follow her voting record completely, but you know, there's aspects of Alice Forgey Kerr's voting when it comes to anything horse racing related that is consistently just mind-boggling, and that she would vote against this knowing the importance to constituents is really amazing. And I reacted to Ray Pollock was obviously, you know, shaking his head in disbelief at her consistent performances. The guy that, from my vantage point, he should just be ashamed of himself, David Givens. How do you represent Simpson County and Franklin and vote against this bill when Kentucky Downs has been a centerpiece and a growth vehicle and an employer and having prospects for further expansion? Everything, you know, that the new ownership is hoping to do, everything that Corey Johnson did to get this whole process started, and he votes against this bill. It's just unbelievable. And there's a bunch of working parts, and I'll let Frank Angst talk about it a little bit, but I mean, the importance of getting this through the House and you know, smoothing this over so that the HHR equipment can continue to support the year-round circuit in Kentucky, as well as, frankly, doing a you know, quite a bit of good toward the harness side as well. And it's amazing. I mean, there's 60,000 jobs tied to this, and then there's all the tax revenue. And the most amazing part is that the arguments against it that comes from this family foundation, that, oh, it's going to lead to just the undermining of the moral fiber of the, what are you talking about? They've been in place for 10 years. None of the things that they're claiming, none of the things that they claimed forever, fighting against the HHR equipment, none of it has come to pass. The only thing that's happened is the racing is improved at Ellis Park and could long term improve at a new turfway. Money has been kept within the borders of the Commonwealth instead of people pouring over the border to Indiana to, you know, to play at the casino there and to play on the, you know, in Ohio now and West Virginia and Pennsylvania. I mean, this is the most myopic and tone deaf and oblivious fight against something so innocuous that it's inexplicable that there'd be any resistance. So I'm anxious for Frank to give us a read. I can't talk to we can't talk to Adam Koenig today because he, I think, is chairing the hearing. In the House hearing today, and right now it started at 8 o'clock. So everybody's going to sweat this vote out, and you hope that that the people that understand the importance and the value of this to the entire state. And I'm sure there's some people thinking or saying, well, it does. If it hurts, the racetracks should stand on. What do you mean stand on their own? So last night, somebody had an argument with somebody saying, oh, they're looking for a handout. What are you talking about? A handout? What the racetracks, Kentucky Downs, they conceived this. They created it. They brought it from the success that Oaklawn had, and they brought the concept into the state. They didn't go, to the state government saying, oh, can we have a stipend off the gaming? They didn't go ask, they've got a lottery in Kentucky, don't they? What's the lottery? Why is the lottery? Why is the lottery running? Did horse racing say, oh, give us a piece of that lottery money? That one really got me last night. Racing's looking for a hint. This is like, it's bizarre. The clouding over of people's judgment and comprehension, it's amazing. It's just crazy. So we'll talk to Frank in 10, 12 minutes and we'll get his take and, his piece in Blood Horse yesterday, reporting on the vote and some of the interesting, actually, there are a few people. In fact, here's somebody, Philip Wheeler from Pikeville. And he apparently has a district that, there's no racing per se. And even he even said that, in his district, there's probably, a fair amount of opposition to gambling. And he said that he saw that this was too important to the state overall. Anyway, we'll talk more with Frank Angst. I don't get it why there would be resistance. And there is word that, you know, there's influence peddlers out there peddling influence. Right? Yeah. So that probably needs to be visited at some point as well. Other news and other topics. Sid later, of course. Sire Watch Pedigree Folk is brought to you by Hill and Dale, and plenty to talk about with Sid. We got the two winners, the Medaglia d'Oro, risk taking, and we'll look at his pedigree, and Candyman Rocket too. That's the one that really, risk taking you knew was live and was a major player in that spot, but. I was dismissive of Candyman Rocket. I just didn't think, maybe with Prime Factor the week before, kind of ringing in the ears, I just thought, boy, stretching out to mile and a 16th, and so we'll get some pedigree thoughts from Sid, and of course the Risen Star on Saturday, and I guess the weather. It's not gonna, it's funny. There's great racing all weekend, and. Weather a real threat in the Fairgrounds Oaklawn corridor, so that's a little disheartening. We'll follow the situation into the weekend where it's supposed to get nasty and cold. Rain, okay. Late winter rain, moderate temperature, you can live with. 38 degrees in rain. not so much fun, and freezing ish temperatures. I mean, who was it that said it was dropping down to? They were talking snow in Louisiana, right? Yesterday, that's right. It was yesterday with Don Stevens. we'll also I don't know if I'll save the should I save the sales results for Sid? No, I guess we don't have to. A flurry of activity, as I said at the top, a flurry late, and the broodmares, particularly the ones that came in the supplement, really boosted things along. Sagara Row, 500,000, and. It seems like she will potentially stay in training. And there was also that was Catherine Hudson who purchased Sagara Row, and I guess seemed very excited from the quotes I read. There was also Vinny Viola who. Was busy on Monday. They came back too with St. Elias and were busy again yesterday. Top purchase, 450,000 for Wonelli, the Orb mare that Rick Porter sold through TaylorMade. And early in the card, early in the day, Hip 328, Belovda, in full to Street Sense. By Gainesway. And we had that conversation with Rich yesterday, with Rich Averill, and we're watching carefully. And Ladies Island, 310,000 also to Gainesway. And I went to congratulate Paul Matisse and Duke and Rich, and they were delighted. It was a perfect scenario. And, That's a square number, 310,000 for Ladies Island. So when you fold in what she made on the racetrack and what she sold for, pretty good claim for 16,000. And 4 years later, and that doesn't even include. So that's what 300 plus figure 500,000 on the track. So there's 800, and then there's what they made betting. Because I guarantee you, given how she ran, they cashed more tickets than they tore up when betting Ladies Island. So congratulations to the Matisses and to Rich. The the top short yearlings. How about a Nyquist Colt for Mackmer Hall? $170,000. West Virginia bred. Bred by Jim Miller, consigned by Bill Reitler. And top filly was also a Nyquist product. Frankfurt Park Farm, and bought by McMahon and Hill, $140,000. So it was a all around a good couple of days. Great way to round out the bloodstock trade season, the horses of racing age. And there's actually, on that topic, there's quite a few of the January sale horses that are turning up this weekend, as mentioned the last couple of days. And I saw another one, actually, another of the of Paul Pompa's horses is in a race at Oaklawn. I think Chris Hartman, I'm not going to dig around, but Chris Hartman got one, and I'm going to forget which one it was, but I think there's at least three of the Pompa dispersal runners. The other news that we've got a couple of injuries that are fairly minor, but two nice fillies are going to be out of action a little bit. Charlie's Penny, who was ready to run in the Rachel on Saturday at Fairgrounds, Bob Lothenback, and of course, Chris Block off the nice win. So you can scratch her out of your Rachel Alexander. And then word came also yesterday that Moonlight Doro, off that flashy win in the Las Virgenes, she's got a chip in the knee. We don't have time today, but I had thought about getting Dr. Alday and letting him talk about it. We've talked about him before, typically knees and ankles and, the difference and Michael Behrens and the My Racehorse team with Spendthrift, and they opted to sounded like one of those scenarios that they had some options, and you look at it, you see where it is, you show it to some vets, and this is why Dr. Alday would be valuable for this conversation, and you go on with it and you don't worry about it. They say, it's not in the spot that's going to bother her. It's not big enough to cause damage. There's varying degrees. So, in this case, they figure a 60 to 90 day, and I guess they're going to give her a going over as well. The injury to Charlie's Penny was not specified per se, but she's basically just sent to Ocala to lay up. So maybe a bruising of some kind, or tweaked something, and just needs a little bit of time. So in addition to that news, there's also round three of the future wager. Hopefully we get to talk to Marty. I hope that we get Marty McGee. And by the way, it is Wednesday, so Marty and Jay's Derby Watch drops today, first round. Look forward to that. And usually I get to go over these with Marty, but he's been kind of laid up. So round three opens Friday, closes Sunday, and your individual, notable individual prices, Life is Good and Essential Quality, 8-1. The All Others, 9-5. No real surprises there. The new names, horses that jumping in at this stage. Nine new faces. Candyman Rocket, 20-1. Dream Shake, 20-1. Freedom Fighter, 20-1. Nova Rags. You know, who was a good closing second in the Sam Davis. 30-1. Prevalence added to this, 20-1. Risk-taking, 15-1. Roman Centurion from last week behind Medina Warrior. 30-1. Swift Shore, that Asmussen, I don't know if that, you know, I don't know how readily or how soon he's going to stretch out, but he's there. 30-1. And how about 20-1 on the great one? The O'Neill that we were pretty impressed with and we talked to Doug about last week. One of two Gretzky namesakes that are on the potentially on the Derby trail, right? Yeah. The with Gretzky the Great. So so nine new faces to consider. And remember on Sunday, 6 o'clock, the Philly pool is the next pool. You know what? We'll probably talk later with Ed. We'll get some more on this and get some thoughts. Right now, Casey's going to reach for Frank Angst, and we'll get the latest as the Kentucky House, the Committee on Licensing, Occupations, and Administrative Regulations, as they meet. So we'll get Frank's thoughts on where things stand and what could and might and will transpire today. Speaking, by the way, of licensing, occupations, and administrative regulation, Pat Cummings is going to join us after Sid in hour two and kind of steps in this week after we had the two initial conversations with Charlie Hayward, industry future. And, of course, Pat, you know, fully immersed in the project for the Thoroughbred Idea Foundation. And he's got, I know he's been listening in because I've heard from him each the last 2 weeks. And plus, there was some nice news that Pat offered the other night. If you saw the, you know, the announcement, the press release, as it were, the news about what transpired in Oklahoma, if you recall, last year, the, you know, the dead heat situation that prevented a player from a deserved payout in a jackpot situation at Remington, 36,000. You know, one of those unanticipated consequences of the way, you know, jackpots seem to conspire. So we're going to talk to Pat and a couple other topics too. Right now, let me reach for Frank Angst, and he joins us from Lexington, from the Blood Horse. Frank, good morning.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
I'm good. At this hour in Frankfurt, the hearings, and I saw where Tom Drury testified, and there'll be a parade of testimony, and, of course, the House has to...
Hey? It's already over, Steve. They just advanced it, so...
Very good.
Yeah, just all right. The story posted on Blood Horse.
Excellent. What time did they expect to vote?
In terms of on the House floor?
Yeah.
I haven't found that out yet, but probably next week, I would think.
Okay.
Although, I mean, the full Senate passed the bill last night, and to show you what a priority this is, and the fact that the lawmakers, supporters of this bill, really have their ducks in a row, the first committee meeting on the House side this morning, and their first topic of their meeting was this bill. So they got right to it and advanced it. It's expected to be a close vote on the House side, though, so we'll have to see.
Before we get to the House and you know, the way in which it differs in makeup and some of the, you know, some of the inside state government kinds of things, talk a little bit about this Senate vote, because 22-15 seemed a little closer than I don't know if I've had a reason to believe that it was going to be pretty overwhelming or more so in the Senate. But what really was just difficult to comprehend, Frank, was certain senators voting against it, whose constituency is very much immersed in racing.
Yeah. I mean, so on the Senate side, the Senate and the House are both in Kentucky are both dominated by the Republican Party. The margin, even the dominance level, even went up after the most recent election. On the Senate side, so you all seven Democrats voted in favor of it. The majority of those Democrats come from areas of the state that directly benefit from racing. Our people see it every day between Keeneland and Churchill Downs and the breeding in central Kentucky. So really, a big part of this battle is within the Republican Party, which in Kentucky, you have a lot of Republicans that run on these social issues that are anti-gambling, and they kind of stick to their guns. But then you have the other side of the Republican Party that, you know, one of the big things that they always run on is economic development and jobs and economic success. Obviously, those are things Democrats want as well. But you understand what I'm saying, and there's a wing of the party that's very much understands what's going on and sees how this can benefit Kentucky. So they have rallied behind it, and that's important because they control all the committees and the House rules and Senate floor rules. So, you know, there's some powerful leadership on the Republican side that has worked to get this through. But like I said, it's not a Republican against Democrat. It's sort of one wing of the Republican Party against a different wing, and maybe opposition is not the right word, but they have to. A lot of it's education and just explaining to people that might be inclined to oppose gambling of what it can bring. Just horse racing in Kentucky just touches on so many. It's just benefits so many areas of the economy. You know, one trainer in operation, Tom Drury, has testified that, you know, he writes more than a dozen checks a month to just different people, you know, feed, straw for the flooring, vet bills. It's just so much is affected. And, you know, in a vacuum, you could look at things one way, but you have to look at reality. Kentucky's surrounded by states that have gambling, and this is something that has worked for 10 years for Kentucky, and it would be ridiculous to get rid of it at this point. It's not full-blown casinos. It's a form of gambling, a paramutual that's very much the whole way it's all set up is to support horse racing. That's one of the things I really like about it. In some states, I think it's fair to say that casino wagering has overwhelmed horse racing, and I've seen owners that I don't know how much they care about the horse racing side, but just the way the legislation here is drawn up really well, in that even if they'd be inclined to very much ignore horse racing, it's not in their interest to do that. It's sort of a form of gaming that's just big enough that everybody benefits.
Well, and it just simply addresses the HHR equipment. And, you know, the way in which I had this discussion with Adam Koenig at the time, that the state Senate or the state Supreme Court handed down this ruling, and I don't think I've ever seen a ruling like that where the court is apologizing for having to, you know, for having to create this issue, and you know, they actually invited the legislature to handle it.
Yeah, there have been some opponents who've argued that HHR is not constitutional. I really think the Supreme Court took that argument out of their hands. And Senator Schickel, John Schickel, who sponsored the legislation that has passed on the Senate side and spoke in support of it at today's House committee meeting, he's been very quick to tell them, hey, the Supreme Court is already, you know, that's already been decided. So what the Supreme Court said is, we want the lawmakers to change the definition of parimutuel wagering to specifically say that HHR is parimutuel. They basically, and I think it's a fair decision from a judicial branch to say, you know, it's take it away from us and go. The lawmakers do your job, and say that this is parimutuel.
Now, and you know, one part of this equation that has gone a little bit unaddressed had to do with the, you know, with the actual, you know, manufacturing of the equipment, and you know, there had been, I thought there was going to be also a reaction and an attempt, you know, it was offered up that the algorithms could, you know, could be set up to the point where it met the criteria where, yes, where even this wouldn't be, where even this change wouldn't be necessary. But it doesn't seem like that, you know, that element has been included in these conversations.
Yeah. You know, throughout the litigation process, the litigation involved machines that first went in at Kentucky Downs and then also went in at the Keeneland and Red Mile share an operation at the Red Mile, which is a harness track in Lexington. So the focus on the litigation was on those machines. Churchill's attorneys, you know, they attended all those hearings and proceedings, but they always made a point of saying, hey, these are about one brand of HHR. We have a different brand. We feel like our brand is parimutuel. So it's never even been looked at on their side. But what's good about this legislation is it would take all those technicalities away, and the state would be saying, which I already think it is parimutuel, you know, but the state is going to specifically say, and that's the, you know, we've argued for 10 years that it's parimutuel, the interests in the state that support it, but that all, it's going to take away all that argument, and the law is going to say this is parimutuel. So they're not going to leave any more doubt about it.
Exactly. And, it, you know, one of the things I kind of railed at in the opening in advance of the visit, the claims on the opposition side that, it's going to lead to, you know, all this breakdown of society and, you know, problem gambling. The equipment's been in place for 10 years. It's not as if they're going to throw a switch and this is going to be introduced. It's existing. The spectrum is, how long has the spectrum been open now? Probably close to 2 years. The Red Mile, 3-4 years.
And the fact is we're surrounded, the whole state's surrounded by added gaming. I mean, during bowl season and football playoffs, I wrote a column about it. I made a couple drives. It's about an hour away to cross the border into Indiana, and I go on my phone and I put in my football bets completely legally. If they had that here in Kentucky, I would do it here. But the point is if people want to gamble, they're going to gamble. I think we all, if we gamble a lot, we all know people that have had a problem with it, and that's terrible for those individuals, but there's a lot of places to get help. But beyond people that have a real problem with it, it's just adults making decisions of how they want to spend their entertainment dollars. So I don't think the guy, it's funny, like so many times you hear that side of the aisle say, we want government out of people's lives. Well, If you want them out of your life, out of people's lives, why are you passing legislation that tells them what they can and can't do with their money? You know, there's inconsistencies there.
to a couple of specifics, and you live in and around Lexington, yes?
Yes. Frankfort.
Okay.
Right where it's all going down.
There, yeah, I didn't realize you were in Frankfort. But Alice Forgey Kerr, what's to be done with her? It's astounding that somebody that has to have countless friends and colleagues that are immersed in the business. How does she justify voting against this?
Yeah. I mean, I guess there's some people that are just going to oppose gambling at every step. But the fact of the matter is agriculture is a highly subsidized venture, and there's reasons for that. I mean, most landowners would be a lot better off selling their land to some developer. But as a country, we've acknowledged that we need food. You know, we need it to make it in people's interest to grow corn or raise cattle. And horse racing is an agricultural venture, and this is the way that the sport has gone to find a way to keep it going and keep it being a success. And, you know, that there was a time where no state supplemented purses or tracks with money from added gaming, but those days are gone. So now the question is, in this environment, does Kentucky want to compete or not? And all the industry is asking for is the ability to compete.
Yeah, the other individual that I couldn't fathom the guy in Simpson County, David Givens. I mean, how Kentucky Downs, where really the generated this entire topic with the introduction of the HHR and championing it. Corey Johnson and his partners, and now you've got Winchell and partners, and going ready to invest further. There's 100 plus full time employees, and then however many are employed during the race meet, and the revenue generation, the tax money, and the trickle down effect that lifted things at Ellis and so on and so forth. I mean, this thing pays for itself. It has to essentially pay for itself.
Tourism is something that isn't mentioned much, but
good point. Good point.
Yeah, I mean, the horse country tours, you can't spend a better day than a horse country tour in central Kentucky. And, part of the reason, obviously there's the tradition, but tradition, things are changing. So you got to stay with the times. And if you don't stay up to date, maybe not all the greatest stallions in the world are going to be in this one area. So, and we love New York and Florida and California too, and realize there's some great stallions there. But you understand what I'm saying.
Sure, of course.
There's a lot of special things in Kentucky, and the state really needs to keep that going.
Now, on that topic, a healthy circuit in Kentucky is vital. I mean, yes, the stallion farms, the breeding side of things won't disappear, but a healthy, vibrant circuit is imperative.
It's very clear for anyone that's looking at what's going on is if HHR is not going to continue to be a reality in Kentucky, that Turfway and Ellis are gone. So then you're losing late summer and all of winter race dates. And, that basically you're going to – it's one thing, obviously the first week of the Churchill Downs spring meet and Keeneland are always going to be successes on some level. But even they would face competition from New York and Oaklawn Park that have done amazing things with their purses. But beyond that, if you lose tracks like Ellis and Turfway, then you're going to have a certain percentage of trainers that go to other states, and they might not come back. So fill in that fifth race at Keeneland that's, you know, a $20,000 claiming race, you might not have those trainers around. They might be in Arkansas or New York or Florida. So that's what you run against, and that's the competition. That's the current setup.
Well, we will obviously wait and find out about I'll send Adam a text and find out about the vote and how much time and how much further, you know, further lobbying is going to go on.
Tom, you know, Tom Drury was great today, and he had previously talked before the Senate committee last week, and he was great then. What a great voice for the industry. And today he kind of added a wrinkle, too, just outlining the investments that these tracks have made. And that's kind of what I was getting at earlier. You know, some people said, oh, this is supplementing the rich, giving money to the rich. And it's like, well, I understand what you're saying, but in some states, money goes to these companies, and racing doesn't see any benefits from it. And that's what I thought Tom did a good job today explaining. Churchill just put in place an $8 million equine medical facility, you know, to treat injured horses. They've just bought Turfway. They're committed to building a brand new state-of-the-art grandstand. They've just put in a state-of-the-art racing surface. So that's what I'm saying, that the way historical racing is set up, the track owners are making huge commitments to racing, and Ellis has millions of dollars committed as well. And that's all going to happen as long as this continues to be the rule of the land, which it's been for 10 years. So, and that would be very unfair, too, is that, you know, these track owners have made these commitments, and now you're going to pull the rug out from under them. It seems really unfair if that would happen.
No, and incredibly short-sighted. It makes no sense.
These are not companies that are just taking the money, pocketing it, and sending it out to their stockholders or their partners. The money's coming back into the industry, which is entirely what you want.
Now, I reached out to Adam Koenig get a feel for when the full house vote is, and you know, there's still, you know, you're seeing, if you're on Twitter and frankly just on any news sites that are Kentucky related, you're seeing countless links to the letter systems. This morning I saw, I don't think I've retweeted it yet, but the Kentucky Chamber of Commerce sent one out this morning or last night. And so clearly there's still time. If you're in Kentucky, if you've got relatives in Kentucky, get the word out to send in these. Granted, they're form letters, although you can personalize them, but you basically put in your zip code and it automatically knows, you know, who your rep is, and you can communicate to them that you're encouraging them to, you know, vote for the bill and to allow HHR to continue in Kentucky.
The racing industry here has been tremendously blessed to have some lawmakers who really get it, and Adam Koenig's one of them, Damon Thayer, David Osborne, Senator Schickel. So it's really been good to have that, but we still got to make sure as many people as possible understand what the situation is. So, yeah, reach out to those people. If you have ties to them, let them hear from you.
Frank,
on the Senate floor, and quite honestly, I don't remember if he was for or against the measure, but he was kind of complaining about how much contact he'd received, and I was kind of thinking, that's kind of your job.
He was complaining about the amount of contact,
and I honestly, I don't remember if he was for or against it, because the only thing that struck me was that he was complaining that he was getting all this input, and I was kind of like, well, that's why you were elected, to, hear from your constituency and make a decision.
That's actually quite something.
Yeah.
Frank Angst is with us from Bloodhorse, and I think it was Byron that that sent out the screen capture of the vote tally, and I retweeted that. So if you're looking for the vote tally to see about your senator,
was Byron was thinking there, because they were put that video up. He's further along on the social media than myself.
That's all right.
That was a good idea, though. They do show that.
Well, you can take a look, and there's the two that I've kind of singled out today: Alice Forgey Kerr and David Gibbons. Just doesn't make any sense. And I'm sure if I went through, there's regions. Part of this that is, not to belabor it, but we think about Florence, with Turfway and the heritage of Latonia before that, and Lexington and Louisville, Kentucky Downs at down in Simpson County, but there's the new the new Oak Grove facility, and there's the plan for Eastern Kentucky, so
as someone who grew up in Cincinnati, and the first track I ever went to was Turfway, shortly followed by River Downs. Like, I often say that people don't realize what a big racing town Cincinnati is. It's one of the few major cities that still has two tracks, because, we count Turfway as Cincinnati's track.
Sure.
And, it's really fallen on hard times, and the purses have, it's just gone down until this year. Churchill made that commitment.
It's been a tremendous year.
And what I'm getting at is, I remember in the 90s is when I got into the sport, and Turfway was just, the Jim Beam was, whoever won that race most years would be the favorite in the Kentucky Derby. And that was a day that 20,000 people would turn out. And I think that's fully possible again at Turfway. And beyond that, Adam Koenig also has supported sports wagering, which unfortunately I don't think is going to happen this session, but I think eventually, if that gets put into place, that's what people want. You can come over and watch some football and get a good lunch and watch the racing and bet it all. And I'm not really much on slot machines, but to each his own. But to me, a day betting bowl games and NFL playoff games and some big races, hopefully some big races at Turfway Park, can't beat that.
Well, if and when, and Adam has been the rep that has introduced the sports wagering bill in the last couple of years, and with each session, and I cannot imagine how much with legal sports betting in Kentucky, how much would be bet cumulatively by UK and yeah. Louisville basketball fans, and frankly, I'm limiting it because the Hilltopper crowd and everybody else, and then Xavier and UC fans that are there'd be more bet on college basketball in Kentucky with legal sports wagering. We're watching the numbers from New Jersey that got reported the last couple of days about Super Bowl. You would see numbers that would be just astounding.
And to me, the historical horse racing and sports wagering, it's just the tools for the industry to succeed. It's the modern, it's the current setup of what you need to succeed. And I would envision just a thriving Turfway. It would be the place to go for a whole lot of people in that area every weekend. Churchill would be the same in Louisville. Keeneland Red Mile would be the same. These would be thriving facilities.
Yep.
And then the other option is to not pass HHR. Turfway never gets built. Churchill sells the land, and we get more shopping malls or Maybe those are out too with Amazon.
Yeah, they're in trouble too.
Food joints, which is the last thing I need, because I need COVID. I know people realize people have a lot bigger problems, but I've put on the pounds, unfortunately.
Frank, I just heard from Adam, and they're hoping for a floor vote as early as tomorrow.
Great,
that's not set yet. But either way, if it's not tomorrow, maybe it would be Friday. But the point is, there is still window to get in touch with your rep, and to ideally to either thank or admonish your state senator. Frank, while I got you, I got about 5-6 minutes to the top of the hour. I'll catch up on another topic or two with you that you've covered in recent weeks, including the situation. I've just mentioned it, you know, as the elements came to pass, the adjustments regarding purse contributions in California. And Churchill basically drawing a line in the sand about it. And you've been following it, including the filing of a lawsuit. Talk about where that stands and explain that to people who haven't, you know, they probably have heard the topic but haven't heard the specifics.
So California, of course, as much as we just talked about Kentucky, California, which is, of course, one of our great racing regions, is really up against it because their purses get nothing. There's no added gaming supporting those purses, and unfortunately, there's probably not much hope on the horizon. I mean, it's the Native American casinos out there are very powerful, and they've really stopped them at every turn at some of the things they wanted to do. So, knowing that, it's all pari-mutuel wagering. That's what's going to make or break California. And with COVID going on, everything has shifted to advanced deposit wagering. So when you go to advanced deposit, when you wager on track, that bet is split between the track and purses largely. You know, it goes to some taxes and some other things. But the vast majority of the takeout goes to purses and the track to keep things going, purses to support horsemen that make the sport a go. When the bet is made through an ADW, they want their fee. So now you're splitting, it's a major split three ways. And obviously during COVID, it's the first thing you have to say is thank goodness for ADW, because it's allowed the sport to go and continue to fund it. But what you have going on in California is the horsemen are saying, with this being the new reality, we need to lower the fee on ADWs. So they reached that agreement with TVG, and it's an agreement they say will pump $15 million into purses. Churchill held out of that agreement, and they're contesting that. And beyond, to me, what caught my eye in the Churchill lawsuit is they're suggesting that the current setup of resolving such disputes should not be allowed. And that potentially could affect horsemen's ability. See, right now, horsemen can say, okay, if you don't want to participate in this, we're not giving you our signal. So racing could conceivably go on, and Churchill owns TwinSpires.com. That's their main ADW. So it could go on, and TwinSpires.com wouldn't carry the signal. Churchill's lawsuit, the way I'm reading it, and I haven't talked, we reached out to Churchill, but with the litigation, they didn't want to comment. But the way I'm reading it, it potentially could take that away from horsemen. I would really be opposed to that. I just think the participants of the sport should have a say of what they're going to charge for their signal of what they're producing, the track and the horsemen.
How quickly will this be addressed, resolved?
I have not looked into that, Steve, and that's always a hard one to call on litigation.
We're going to actually
think there would be some amount of timeliness, though, just because.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pat Cummings is going to be on with us in hour two, and you know, I've had these back-to-back weeks of conversation with Charlie Hayward that we're calling Industry Future, and Charlie's piece at TRC, and in fact, you came up in both of the visits the last 2 weeks talked about the inverted pyramid, as Fred Pope used to call it, and you know, your coverage, you've been one of the few journalists to regularly visit the topic of the computer-assisted wagering groups and their effects on the pools. And so we discussed that the last couple of weeks with Charlie, and some of this fee structure Pat has addressed as well as CAW money in his role with the Thoroughbred Idea Foundation. So we're gonna touch on some of this again next hour.
I think I would advise all your listeners to listen in on that. Pat is as sharp as they come, and as pro racing as they come. So that'll be good to hear. And he's well versed on those topics. You know, I get it. The computer guys they put a lot of money through the windows, so they're needed. I like some of the things that Naira's doing, though, for sure. And at least carving out some pools where, if that's a concern for the player, they at least know where they can go.
Are you you're about due for a revisit of the of the topic?
Yeah, maybe so.
I'll every so often when this comes up on the show, I you must see it. I retweet your original piece, and we had a big discussion at the HBPA convention in New Orleans that coordinated with a piece that you wrote.
There's a lot of advantages there that in my opinion, in other games where you are competing against other players, not competing against the house, that would not be acceptable. Poker comes to mind. I think if I was in a poker tournament and somebody showed up with a computer that had algorithms based on all the knowledge of all the other players in the tournament, they would quickly be told to put their computer away.
Yeah, it's a different, and on that topic, we explained in conversation that we understand, and nobody is going to question volume discounts, essentially.
Yeah.
I mean, that
yeah. And that's the thing. I say things like that, but I also live in the real world where these are groups that have supported racing and made it possible. So I just think a lot of it.
They're simply utilizing the environment to churn money and to ideally break even, so that when they fold in their rebate, they carve out a nice profit for themselves.
And the thing is because it's paramutual, it makes it tougher for everybody else.
Exactly. And it'd be one thing if they were just simply had whatever presence they have, but as you explained, the ability to send in thousands of wagers in the final seconds before the bell in batches, that not only is that seemingly an unfair advantage, it also is creating the negative perception when it comes to the late odds changes, because by the time the system is flushed seconds after the bell ring and the system pulls all the monies in and gets computed, it only takes a few seconds, but then it also has to spill out into the television coverage and into the presentation package. I've explained this 1,000 times. And when those odds are on the screen, Those odds are two flushes behind. And it takes it also another problem is unless horses change position until those if horses come out of the gate 1, 2, 3, 4 and they stay that way for the first half of the race, you're not going to see those odds changes reflected until there's an order, until the placing judge punches up 3, 1, 4, 2. Then the next flash gets put in, and then it won't be until another change that the final flash is reflected in the visual odds. And so it's giving this horrible perception to people that odds are, people are betting after the bell. And it's a unintended consequence of the advantage that these people have. And then there's the artificial, the extra takeout essentially that they're foisting on everybody by depressing value in the pools. I mean,
you're very much where I'm at. I guess I'm always trying to look for a way that things can work for everybody. But I mean, that's very much where I'm at.
Yeah.
I just think it really wasn't meant to be this. So it makes it tough.
It makes it tough.
They have every advantage. They are able. Their algorithms know what the pools are going to be, what the odds are going to be. Then they're the last ones in the pool, and then they're able to basically just put a number. Even if you had that knowledge, you physically as a human wouldn't be able to put through all those wagers to take advantage of it. And I think you've seen it in. When I really looked at it the last time that Naira Betts had a late pick five that was that put the computer players out, and you could just see the payouts were just significantly higher, and I think that's what Naira's going to see again.
Well, we're going to continue to visit this topic. Frank, this was terrific, and I just sent out another link to this one from Keep, horseswork.org, and the opportunity for at least another day for Kentucky residents to urge their representative now. The Senate's done their job. Urge your representative to do the right thing. And, Frank, I probably won't see you until spring, but look forward to it. And we'll probably talk again between now and Derby time.
That'd be great, Steve.
I appreciate it. Frank Angst, everybody. And you follow Frank, of course, you can follow him on Twitter. I don't see a ton of tweeting from Frank, but it's BH_F Angst. And what you do see is his terrific written work coverage. And, of course, he and Matt Hegarty and T.D. Thornton, the kind of the three-headed hard news trade journal coverage that you can count on. Let's take a break. Top of the hour here, and Sid Fernando standing by. We'll talk about the two prep winners. Maybe we'll look at some of the runners lined up for the Risen Star, see if Sid's looked at that field. And there is some Risen Star news. In fact, speaking of Byron King, as it happens, I just retweeted Byron's note. I went to look for that graphic that he put up last night. And I saw where he had heard from Robertino Diodoro. And Diodoro is keeping Keep Me in Mind in Arkansas for Monday's Southwest. So you can take Keep Me in Mind out of the Risen Star. All right? So he'll make his return there. And that seemed like the way he was leaning anyway. It's shorter, and there was plenty of reasons to, and he's based at Hot Springs. So, officially, and in fact, Byron kind of reiterating this lousy weather warning, too, for the weekend through the region. It's February. What are we going to do? Let's take a break. Sid Fernando next. Sire Watch. Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hillandale.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports presents